And now, everyone's favorite autodidactic iconoclast, Drew Marshall.
The only time that I loved, I was brave. And I was out of breath every day. Just frightened of feeling this way, but I never had such peace of mind. Peace of mind. Be brave. Elena loves me.
All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. Again, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show. What a strange show today.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, it's just so whack. How do you describe it?
Eclectic? Weird?
No, that's every week.
Why the faith?
Well, it's time for our last segment on the show, and it's we lovingly refer to this segment as the Journey segment, because I remember going to church a lot, and the only people they ever brought up on stage to tell their stories were people that used to struggle with this, and then they used to struggle with that, and then they found Jesus, and everything was great. And what I've discovered is that Jesus people are screwed up. It's not always smooth for Jesus people. If it was always smooth for Jesus people, then they would be the most irritating people on the planet. They're close, but they would be the most irritating people on the planet. So Alana first shared her journey with us in our show back in 2011. Can you believe that? 2011. Where'd that go?
Yeah, time flies.
In the summer of 2007, things got kind of crazy for you. So, how do you summarize it? You know, for our listeners, how do you? You've shared this a million times, right? Have you done the testimony thing? Gone up on stage and said your story and stuff?
No, not really.
Why?
Maybe because you kind of, as the Jesus people, you expect, you know, the story to end a certain way or to come to some sort of summation that makes sense. So I think I kind of was waiting for it to make sense, to get a punchline, to then stand on a stage to say, here it is, everybody. But it hasn't come. So.
And this is why I wanted you on the show twice, because that kind of thinking, I've got nothing to offer, or the church may say, well, we won't get you up on stage yet because you don't have the punchline. You know? You don't have the ending. You don't have the bow.
Yeah.
That's just garbage. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but mind you, this is me on
myself. You're putting this on yourself.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
for sure. I'm sure someone may want to listen to it, but I'm kind of thinking, well, we'll just wait a second. Wait till I've got something so wonderfully victorious to tell you that, you know.
But you know that's brainwashed stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's foolishness, because when do you actually arrive? I'm pretty sure you don't. I'm just coming to that now.
Well, actually, I arrived about 6 years ago, and
aware.
It just hasn't suited me.
What?
Arriving. I don't like the feeling of arriving.
Wait, you arrived?
No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
If we change it to showing up.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So 2007.
Yes.
When did you guys, your mom had been dealing with breast cancer for a long time.
For about nine.
9 years. And then 2007 happens, and she takes a turn for the worse, obviously, right?
She does, and passes away in November. Around that time, we discovered that my dad had pancreatic cancer. And so he was in the hospital having surgery while my mom was put into palliative care. And then 6 months later, after her passing, she passed away. He passed away. Yeah.
Tell me about the when your mom died. What was going on? How did that go down for you? Where were you? What was happening when your mom died?
We were all, I was in school. We were all in school. And early one morning, you know, you get a call and you arrive. And
who phoned you?
The hospital.
And what did they say?
You need to come down. So we kind of knew that kind of a call would come. Mind you, we didn't completely know because, you know, we're a big family of faith, and my mom was not going to die. So
because it was, we're claiming God's promise and healing.
We're claiming healing, just like I claim arrival.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Well said.
Yeah. So we show up, and And yeah, it, within maybe a half an hour, she breathed her last breath.
And you were there?
Yes, myself and all my siblings. We were all there.
What was that moment like?
It was the most overwhelming moment of anyone's life slash death, I guess. I was holding her hand, and you know, you just watch these labored breaths, and you just kind of anxiously, I guess, wait for the last one. And when the last one happens, it's the strangest thing, and yet there, you know, there's just immense grief that takes over, and yet just a real assurance, as strange as it sounds, like that last breath that she took there was a first breath taken somewhere, and you knew it. And it, you know, not because it was based in theology or, you know, your pastor up on the front says it, just because in that moment you knew it. So there was, yeah, there was followed that were lots of moments of, you know, intense grief, but intense assurance, I guess. So that just kind of was the theme of the next year.
Sure. What impact did knowing that your father was sick play in all of this?
I had one of those moments where I just like broke down and did like an "Are you kidding me, God? Are you kidding me?"
Wait, let me just clarify something for my own brain. Which means I obviously wasn't paying attention. When your mom died, mm-hmm. where was your dad?
He was in another hospital. He had just come out of surgery for the cancer. They were mm-hmm. trying to cut out as much as they could. So he was in another hospital. Yeah.
That is insanely unfair.
Yeah. Tell him about it.
Tell me about when your dad died.
A very different experience. My parents were separated, so it was not us living with our dad at the time. So it was very different, the seeing him, the being with him during his sickness, and we weren't actually there at the end. In this, he remained in another hospital, and our call came too late. So we were on our way down, and he passed away before we got there. So it was a very different grief journey for him as well.
You feel ripped off because you weren't there?
The first one was really hard, so maybe not. It was different, but yeah, maybe almost like a break. God was giving us a little bit of a break.
Okay, so now you're the oldest of seven.
Mm-hmm.
How old is the next sibling?
3 years younger.
3 years younger. Was there any question that everything would fall to you? Or was it just, I'm the oldest, it's falling to me? I mean, you were 22.
Yeah, 23 at this point.
23 with
by,
your dad.
By everybody.
Yeah.
And I think it was. Mind you, maybe I'm more of the personality that says, you know, it is falling to me.
I got this.
No one else needs to come in. We're good.
And you were surrounded by great people from the church and the
yes.
school community and the whole thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got to put your life on hold.
Mm-hmm.
So by this time, you've got your degree, or you're just about to get your degree?
Yeah, my mom died in the fall of my fourth year, and my dad in the spring of my fourth year. And praise the Lord, I finished the fourth year.
Mm.
So, you know, I can wave around this degree in international development studies. Yes.
How's that helped you?
Oh, well, you know, like, 8 years later, still waving. So, yeah.
So you really did put your life on hold because you needed to get a job that mm-hmm. helped to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I would imagine, would be in a pitch-in mode, would they not? The entire family?
Definitely. I kind of liken it to a little commune where everyone had a role, and if you didn't, you know, fulfill your role, there was going to be problems. It really was quite amazing how we banded together.
How old was the youngest at that point in time?
13.
How old is the youngest now?
He is, let me do the math, 21.
Okay. So everybody's kind of on their way.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's officially adult.
Do you feel bad about the fact that you are now looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, it's my time? Because there's something in the Jesus community that doesn't let us say that.
Yeah, it's a selfish mentality to kind of put yourself first. To think about number one. But I guess that time has to come.
How do you, are you there? See, that's the answer right there that makes my brain fall apart.
It's true.
So what has been stirring in you in the last, 6 months? Year?
Yeah, I think not necessarily stirring, more like hitting walls. So the wall will hit you where you realize, you know, things are happening with your siblings and, you know, you want to help, you think you should help, you got to help, but you can't help. And then all of a sudden it's, well, because this isn't my role anymore, or this isn't my job, or they're on their own journey. And so I had a number of things in my life where, you know, you come to this wall and you think, okay, no, this is it. Like, this is a dead end here, or this isn't working here. And so maybe you're forced to put yourself in this position of, okay, so I can't think about other people. Maybe I need to be thinking about me.
You quit your job.
I did.
Are you nuts?
I am. Like, I know.
But why did you quit?
It was another wall. It sounds so strange, but it became extremely laborsome and extremely joyless. Forgive me, anyone. Any of my colleagues who may eventually
hear
this.
But hold on. Let me help soften that, because you're not saying it's a horrible place. Look,
oh my goodness.
Every place has its dysfunction. And when you work for almost 10 years at any place, there's going to be a little bit of, I don't even know what that word is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, they were my family. They were, you know, your other mothers and fathers. And all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe I need to fly the coop.
Yeah. No, that's right. Because the community that you were part of, the church and the church's school, they were very invested in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not, I was going to say overlords. It's not the right word. They were sort of surrogate parents for you in some ways, and therefore kind of in your business.
Yeah, they're lovingly in your business.
But you're not 22 anymore.
No, fast forward 10 years.
You are now 36.
Okay, let's go back a little.
She hates me so much.
Yeah.
And it's just time. You just need a little space, a little bit of, okay, so you and the only way to really get that is you've got to pull out of that community, and pulling out of that community means you can't work at that school anymore. So you quit.
Mm.
Now what?
Well, I've had a week to think of now what's. Some really low moments and some other low moments.
So what I'm hearing is...
So what you're hearing is, oh my goodness, I'm crazy. Now what? My initial now what was Bible college and, you know, go serve the Lord in that capacity.
Why?
Well, I know, because you think in the Christian community, and who knew that that's the thing to do. As soon as I announced it, everyone wanted to tell me about their, you know, sister, brother, husband, how they also want to go back or go to take some courses. And I'm thinking, wow, okay, this is a popular thing. But I don't know. I think maybe all those walls that you hit, you want answers. And so I'm kind of on a quest to find answers.
Okay.
And maybe this is just first stop.
Christians will quite often pray and ask God's guidance and ask God to reveal to them what they should do. Help me make the right decision. Show me your way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
How's that worked for you? Wait, have you done that stuff? Have you said all that stuff? I kind of feel that way.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely like the right or wrong path, right, Lord? Like, I'm on the right one, right?
Right.
And it's like his thoughts are not your thoughts, nor his ways your ways is all I get back. Like, he's got to be so much bigger because I can't understand it. I can't get it.
Wait, has God ever answered your prayer? Prayer-za?
Oh, well, for the promises that he gives, yeah, sure. You know, there was peace in that moment. There was assurance in that moment. Has he answered, like, the hey, that was...
Dear baby Jesus, I would love a boyfriend.
Yeah, or a
house.
Just thought
I'd bring that up.
Just thought I'd change the subject.
Yeah, I did. That was pretty quick.
Yeah.
But this conversation for me is about unanswered prayer, seeing direction where is it really direction, or is it just the way we – you know where I'm going with this, Tim?
Is it the Christian thing to do to go to Bible college?
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
But also discerning God's will.
I have no idea how to do that.
Do you, Alana?
The answer should be no.
I mean, yes.
No.
The answer should be yes, I know how to discern God's will. That's the answer. It should be.
The answer, I don't even think any of us know what. Should it be yes or should it be no? All I know is that my questions and my answers are, the answers that he gives me are seemingly that which can't be understood. Yeah, you're just kind of, maybe you're asking the wrong questions, therefore you're hearing the wrong answers, or he's giving you the questions to ask, but we're not asking those ones because we want the other ones answered. And yeah, so I don't know about the whole questioning and answering, but yeah, I'm just going to be in his face. And
so in the blurb that we wrote here, I'm left with the disappointment of the season asking, what about me? Pull that apart.
Did I give that to you?
Yep.
Oh, great. Okay. yeah, the disappointment of the season. I think it's all those walls or all those expectations and hopes and dreams that you kind of saw being fulfilled or thought would be fulfilled. And so you're just left with this disappointment, disappointment in how things turned out, disappointment in some of the things you thought you heard from God and maybe were wrong. And the what about me, that's maybe more along the lines of the selfish questions, you know, I see all my siblings going off and doing wonderful and amazing things, and so their seasons are in my mind, you know, brightening up. And okay, Lord, so yeah, why have you brought me to this season of disappointment?
Let me go back to something I referred to earlier. Do you feel guilty about the what about me? Do you feel guilty? Because I think I know you a little bit now, Alana, to know that, like, if anybody was going to put their life on hold to help raise their siblings, it would have been you. That's just how you're wired. You're a very others-oriented person. That's one of the reasons I actually like you.
That's so nice.
Let's just leave that there. No, you're very others-oriented. I get that. You're also not a pushover. Like, I remember when we were talking about something in the office one time at the school, and you grabbed me by the scruff of my neck.
I might have done that.
And said, what are you doing? So I know you to be a strong, independent, yet others-focused person. And these are qualities, I think, that are fantastic qualities. You have your degree in, what is it again?
International Development Studies.
So that means you could work with that degree, you could easily kind of get into what?
Your non-government organizations, aid agencies, yeah, basically anything with involved in development project oriented.
And ideally, is that something that you actually wouldn't mind? I mean, just because you have the degree doesn't mean – I mean, it's been 10 years now too, right? So maybe you've changed as a human being. Maybe you want to go get your early childhood education thing. Is that something that, you know, let's say someone contacted the show and said, hey, that girl you had on, I work for an NGO, I'm VP of blah, 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 and I want to hire her. I want to bring her on. What if they said that to you? How would you feel?
I would definitely seek out employment at this time. Mm-hmm. but yeah, and as well as just like looking into their organization, because you want to be able to agree with their mandate and their visions. But yeah, hey, if there are other others-oriented people out there, and we can be both be of the same others mindset on certain goals, then yeah, I wanna jump on.
I want a radio resume.
The what?
The radio resume going
yeah,
on here.
That's right. That's it. Yeah. I want to just go back to going to Bible college. I was thinking about this driving down. I don't think it's cool for a young person, and you're a young person. Nice. I don't think it's cool for a young person to go, I don't know, I guess I'll go to college. I don't know, I guess I'll go. Whether it's, you know, your parents paying for you to go to college, or you're paying to go. If you're paying to go to college and you're limited with resources, I think you really got to think it through even more. But the whole, yeah, I don't know what to do, so I'll go to college. If you were my, I've told you this. If you were my sister, I would give you the biggest wedgie you've ever had for doing that, right? So I want to know. This is just you mm-hmm. and me having a private conversation. I want to know how much influence the Christian community has on you potentially deciding to go to Bible college because you don't know what to do. Is mm-hmm. it? And I want to know if this is your thing, if you're owning this, or if this is expectation, if it's tribal conditioning, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to find a guy?
Oh, yeah, the whole MRSs, right?
Say it again.
Go to college to get your MRS. Your missus?
Oh, that's pathetic.
Yeah,
it's pathetic that you didn't get it right away, actually.
I don't get that stuff. Okay, yeah. Anyway, so.
Yeah, well, the nice thing is this came all by myself. I didn't ask anybody if this was a good idea.
What are you going to study?
Bible and theology.
Why?
Well, it's, okay, stay.
Stay with me here.
But I love the father-daughter relationship. It sounds strange, but the whole idea that a daughter can honestly just look sweetly at her father or bat her eyes or widen them, and all of a sudden his heart is hers. His attention is there, and that's just it. And as daughters, we all had this ability. One sister had it a little bit more than the other. So you know, you just kind of, if you really want something, you know, you tell that one, okay, go ask dad. And I don't know. I just kind of feel like maybe it's my time to indulge or be selfish because I don't know. I just kind of feel like studying the Bible. It's almost like, you know, me going up to my dad and being like, I'm here, Dad, you know, just eyes wide and wanting to hear what he has to say, or just listening to what he's said before and just talking about what he is saying and what I'm reading and what I'm learning and hearing other people and you know, hearing about their relationships with this dad that we both share in common. And I don't know, it's just kind of like an indulgent thing where it might not be, you know, Bible and theology. And I may not, I don't know, maybe it'll be a couple months, maybe it'll be a year, but it'll be me just sitting and interacting with my father. Hold on.
So two things. One, wow, that was an amazing answer. That was crazy. That you made me all mushy inside because of that. That's such an awesome thing. It's okay. So I'll give you a point on that one.
It's something.
But why do you got to pay for that? You don't need to pay for that.
Well, what about the fact that I love learning? I do recognize.
Go on the Google.
Yeah, well, that's true. But now it's like, now it's like this excuse, like I have to do it. Yeah. Or, you know, I have all this time set aside to do it. And now I can do it with other minds who, know more than I do.
Yeah.
Or have a different, you know, perspective that, you know, I can kind of draw from and take my favorites or what resonates to myself as truth from everybody else.
So ultimately what you're saying, this is your choice.
Yeah.
Do they have scholarships for people with crazy, heartbreaking stories like yours?
Well, I'm sure there are lots of other heartbreaking stories out there.
Yours is pretty good.
But yours is the heartbreakiest right now.
Well, it's maybe...
Thanks, Billy Ray.
No problem.
Huh. I wasn't going to get this mushy, but I... if you were my daughter, I would be the proudest dad on the planet. Just the way you have communicated this, the way you have sacrificed so much of your life, the way you have, you know, stepped up, and the way you... Just the way you process, like you just won me over with the Bible college thing. Now I feel like an idiot for saying you're not, you know, you shouldn't go to Bible college. What?
Oh, I'm glad you realized you're an idiot.
Shut up. Why you gotta hurt me like that? I'm all vulnerable now.
I'll bat my eyes.
Yeah. All right. Man. Well, let me just throw this out to our listeners, okay?
Okay.
If by chance there's anybody out there with a heart,
get them when they're down.
Radio manipulation here. If you want to help Alana in some way, I will be the go-between person to that because Alana's going to feel really awkward and strange and horrible, and she hates the fact that I'm even saying this right now on air. And that means if you want to and there's always a risk doing this because you throw it out on air and you think, oh, and then all of a sudden nobody does anything. You're like, ah, oh, I suck. Don't take it as that. I have to throw this out there. If there's somebody out there that wants to help Alana pay for some Bible college, contact me. If there's somebody out there that wants to help Alana with maybe a possible job offer at an NGO or something like that, contact me. If somebody out there wants to just bring this woman on their team and hire in another capacity or whatever, contact me. That's all I have to say about that.
And Kristen Mingle.
Yes. Yes. And then there's that.
I'm sorry, are we out of time?
You are. Well, we actually are out of time. Yeah, that's funny stuff. Funny stuff. I want to thank you because every time I have seen you, you have made my day. You've lightened up the world. It's just, I know I sound like I'm writing for Hallmark. Your parents died when you were 22. My mom died when I was 21. And I wonder how that's impacted me these days. And you had both parents die when you were 22. It's not cool. It's not fair. It's not right.
No.
But you can't sit around and whinge about it. You haven't done that. And you haven't had time to do that. You've had to raise these kids. Oh, by the way, of your siblings, which one do you love the most?
Well, it better be the one I live with right now. Oh, I'm going
good answer.
To going to her, right?
Good answer. Do you think anybody's listening from your family right now? Did you tell anybody
okay.
you're coming on the show?
I only told one of them, and I kind of, like, not told the another particularly, and I basically said, well, if it works out, I'll let you know where I was today.
You're funny.
Wow.
You're funny.
Yeah.
You're such a behind-the-scenes girl, aren't you?
Yeah, you know. Let's just stay quiet.
Well, thank you for the follow-up was important for me because, you know, what a journey you've had. I remember when I first had you share your story in the show. I was just like, wow, that is just amazing. And now you're in this... Okay, you're taking your finger off the hold button, you know? I'm proud of you. I really am, Alana.
Thanks, Drew.
Exciting and scary, and I think that's why we're showing you lots of respect right now.
Yeah,
really
yeah, so much. Instead of saying, if you don't sin, Jesus died for nothing, because, you know, I got to change up my sayings.
Yeah.
I want to now say,
yeah.
I hope you find the God that sees you. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Take a stand on justice. Take a stand on race. I'm gonna take me a TV evangelist and punch him in the face. I sing about the hope that's in me and ask why the poor aren't fed. But if I don't toe the party line, it'd be better if I were dead. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about.